So, guys, you are locked on Falcons. I'm your host, Aaron Freeman. And today we're going to be talking about where the Falcons stand roster-wise, going position by position, now that the Falcons are coming out of their Week 6 bye.
You are Locked On Falcons, your daily Atlanta Falcons podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
So, ladies and gentlemen, you know me. I'm Aaron Freeman, been covering the Falcons, formerly at FalcFans.com, RIP, for a very long time. You've checked me out on Twitter at FalcFans and writing up written content over at the Falcoholic, the SB Nation website for the Atlanta Falcons, and of course, the host of this illustrious Locked On Falcons podcast, your daily Atlanta Falcons podcast, right here on the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. In today's episode, we'll be looking at each position group across the Falcons roster to assess their respective performances now that five games have been played and the Falcons are coming out of their bye week. And of course, we'll be starting things with the offense, get later into the defense, and also be talking about that all-important phase of the game known as special teams. Yes, it does matter. Before we get into the Falcons offense, I want to thank you guys for making Locked On Falcons your first listen of the day. Of course, Locked On Falcons is free and available on all podcast platforms, whether you're looking for it on Apple, Odyssey, Google, Spotify, and so many more. And of course, now Locked On Falcons is free and available on YouTube as well. If you're watching us right now on YouTube, make sure you like and subscribe. And don't be shy about leaving a comment if you have any thoughts on any of the things I'm going to be talking about on today's episode. So getting into the offense, starting with the quarterback position, you know, one of the things that we've seen the Falcons do, particularly the last 2 weeks in these first five games of the season, is starting to push the ball down the field a lot more. And I don't think it's a coincidence that Matt Ryan has looked better and the Falcons offense has overall looked better now that it's kind of resembling an actual NFL offense because they're not just dinking and dunking. Now, we haven't seen the deep stuff really get opened up. It's been more relative to where it was the first three games, but still not a high degree compared to most NFL offenses. And I'm probably going to have to make peace with the idea eventually this year, but I'm not there yet, that we're not going to see much of a deep game in this Falcons offense, given some of the concerns about not only the quarterback and how much arm strength he has, the wide receiver group as well, and essentially the play calling. But at least if they're not going to open up the offense in terms of true verticality, they are getting more opportunities in terms of the intermediate range of throws. When you look at the throws between 10 and 19 yards through the air, through the first three games, Matt Ryan had the sixth lowest rate in terms of those percentage of throws on the immediate range, according to Pro Football Focus. Now, if you look at the last 2 weeks, and of course, we're not factoring in the week six games and where it necessarily ranks, but at least in weeks four and five, and at least through the Thursday night game in week six, Matt Ryan had the third highest rate over these last couple of weeks. So that's a good thing. You know, we've seen Matt Ryan also play really well in terms of handling the pressure the last 2 weeks as well. He earned Pro Football Focus's highest grade for a quarterback while under pressure starting in week four on. And we'll need to see that continue because obviously the Falcons are going to face a number of tough defenses the rest of the way. You know, this slow start for Matt Ryan, you know, despite this slow start for Matt Ryan, I mean, you know, we're starting to see Matt Ryan look like a version of himself, at least against pressure, that we really haven't seen since the 2018 season. So we'll leave it there with the quarterback and move on to the running back position. You know, it's been an up and down year for the running backs. We've seen Cordarrelle Patterson play at a high level, especially as a pass catcher, as he's made a number of plays in that arena. But his running has been a little bit up and down. You know, he was good in week one, not so good the next couple of weeks, then good again in week four and good again last week. And then Mike Davis, in contrast, the supposed RB1, you know, has seemingly looked good in weeks two and three, didn't look good last week in, against the Jets, but not so good in weeks one and four. So it seems like when one guy is up, the other guy is down. But last week especially was the first time all year long in terms of their success rate, measuring their rushing efficiency, where both guys were above 40% in terms of success rate. And And that's what you want to see. At a minimum, you want to have a success rate of 40%, ideally 45% or higher. 50% is indicative of having a healthy running game. You saw that from Mike Davis in week 5 with a 50% above success rate. So we'll sort of have to see if Wayne Gallman can get into the mix. He's only gotten limited opportunities the last 2 weeks, but he's done some positive things with those limited opportunities. Overall, the run game is coming off their best game against the Jets, and we'll sort of see if that continues as the rest of the year wears on. As I mentioned, talking about Matt Ryan and the uptick in defensive quality, if you look at the uptick in run defenses the Falcons are going to have to face, according to Football Outsiders' defensive DVOA metric against the run, 8 of the Falcons' final 11 opponents currently rank in the top 16 in terms of that run defensive DVOA. So we're going to see a lot of good run defenses, or at least above average ones, over this, you know, next 11 game stretch. Moving on to the wide receiver group, again, another underwhelming group, although, you know, I think expectations weren't super high for this unit because a lot of people thought it was basically Calvin Ridley and a bunch of other guys, and it's kind of been Calvin Ridley and a bunch of other guys, but even Calvin Ridley hasn't been playing at a high level. You know, one of those other guys that we thought would figure prominently into this season was Russell Gage. He has been sidelined with injury, and when he was healthy, he wasn't doing a whole lot those first 2 weeks before he suffered that injury against Tampa Bay. And then Calvin Ridley's been up and down. He's done some positive things, particularly when it's come to moving the chains, but you're not necessarily seeing Calvin Ridley make the big plays that we were so accustomed to seeing last year, and we'll sort of have to see if that changes. Alamide Zaccheaus, who has replaced Russell Gage as the number 2, who should normally be the number 3, has had some positive moments, but has generally struggled with inconsistency due to a bunch of drops. Tajae Sharpe, in limited opportunities, has done some good things, but for the most part, you know, he's been reliable, but he's been basically asked to just run like 4-yard slants over and over again. He's been good in that, but, you know, that's certainly valuable, but not necessarily extreme value. So one of the big questions we had about this wide receiver group, you know, there were two questions I had, at least going into this season in the summer, was who's going to provide the big plays for this unit now that Julio Jones is gone? And the answer so far is not really anybody. Cordarrelle Patterson, I guess, and he's technically a running back. And then who is going to be that sort of reliable option for Matt Ryan, particularly in those contested catch situations that Ryan has consistently had throughout his career? And so far, none of these wide receivers has really emerged. It's not a surprise that Calvin Ridley hasn't been that guy, because that's never really been Calvin Ridley's game. And this has kind of been my biggest beef with the Arthur Smith so far in terms of his offense. He talked a big game about making adjustments now that he arrived to Atlanta to fit the Falcons personnel rather than just automatically porting over exactly what he did in Tennessee. And I do feel like, at least as far as Calvin Ridley is concerned, we haven't really seen Arthur Smith make the adjustments to really fit his offense, you know, around Calvin Ridley to a high degree. We're not seeing many of the same routes that Calvin Ridley had a lot of success with under Dirk Cutter these last couple of years. And to be fair to Arthur Smith, you know, that first year under Dirk Cutter, Ridley kind of got off to a slow start that year as well. It seemed like Dirk Cutter was trying to figure out how to utilize Calvin Ridley. It was really only Sark, and probably in part because he coached Ridley in college, that really got off to a fast start with Calvin Ridley right away. So, you know, to be fair to Arthur Smith, Dirk Cutter also it took him like 6 or 7 games to really figure it out with Calvin Ridley back in 2019. And then once he did, there was no real looking back. And hopefully we can say a similar thing in a couple of weeks now coming out of this bye with Calvin Ridley moving forward. Moving on to the tight end position, you know, Kyle Pitts has been solid. You know, the hype was pretty big for Kyle Pitts going into the season, and you can certainly say he didn't really start to live up to the hype until this Jets game. But then again, the hype was probably way too high than it needed to be. Kyle Pitts has been very effective on third downs at moving the chains. We've seen some big plays, particularly in big moments at the end of the Giants game, at the end of the Jets game, to really spark that offense to get the points that they needed to go and win that game late. It's really the red zone production, the lack of red zone production, that has been really frustrating with Kyle Pitts. And it's not been due to a lack of trying, because the Falcons have targeted Pitts quite a bit in the red zone, but a lot of it has been lobs and fade type of plays. season. That's never really been a strength of Matt Ryan's game throughout his NFL career. So I don't know if doing that with Kyle Pitts is really making a ton of sense moving forward. So we'll see if that changes, or whether or not, you know, as Matt Ryan gets more comfortable with Kyle Pitts, he'll suddenly start being better at those lobs and fades simply because of Pitts' skill there. The other tight end, Hayden Hurst, has been asked to block a little bit more than he's probably used to. Hasn't been that effective in that role, but when he's been targeted, which hasn't been that often, he's been pretty money, particularly on third and shorts. He's been a reliable set of hands for the Falcons this year, one of the few receivers that isn't necessarily struggling with drops among these two position groups at the tight end and wide receiver position. But you would like to see Hurst be a bigger part of the passing game, in large part due to the struggles and inconsistency of the wide receiver group. So hopefully we can see that moving forward. Lee Smith has been solid as a blocking tight end for the Falcons. It hasn't been perfect, but he's been solid as of late for the most part. We've also seen Felipe Franks get some reps at this tight end position, and I haven't necessarily been a huge fan of that, although when I think back to that Giants game, the one rep that I recall seeing Franks as a blocker, he did a pretty decent job as a blocker. But this, is to me, is an experiment that I'm not necessarily a huge fan of in principle. I feel like if you want to get a fourth tight end, go get a fourth tight end rather than trying to convert Felipe Franks to that position in the middle of a season. This is something that you can continue and tinker with in the offseason, but if you need a body at that position, then go get a body. Moving on to the offensive line, we've seen this offensive line show progress this year, but it's very much a work in progress. But in general, this unit has been trending upwards over the course of the season. The blocking has been inconsistent and hit and miss, but given how low they started out in that week one game, it has definitely improved over the last couple of weeks. And, you know, the week one performance, the poor play of the offensive line really seemed to break the Falcons offense. And then it took kind of 2 weeks for Matt Ryan to build up enough trust in that unit, despite playing better over those next couple of games, before he was basically not afraid to just check the ball down every single time, which is sort of the story of those weeks two and three games. And we've seen that confidence grow in the last couple of games, as I mentioned earlier, with the Falcons, you know, being willing to throw the ball a lot more over the intermediate part of the field and occasionally down the field. So that's a positive sign. Hopefully we can see that continue. But really the issue with the offensive line is getting more consistency from that unit. I thought in pass protection, they did really well against Washington in week four. They took a step back in terms of that against the Jets. But as I mentioned earlier, because Matt Ryan was so good against the pressure that week, it didn't really matter. And because I don't necessarily have 100% confidence that we will continue to see Matt Ryan perform at that level against pressure, because again, we haven't seen that consistently over the last couple of seasons. And I don't know if you can really expect that, particularly given that the tendency among aging quarterbacks is that they tend to get worse and worse against pressure. So I don't feel like, Father Time is undefeated in that regard. So I'm not holding out hope that Matt Ryan's going to continue to play like he's done the last couple of weeks in terms of pressure. So for me, hopefully we can see a little bit more of the Washington level performance in terms of this pass protection moving forward than the Jets level performance. Moving on to the offensive line performance against the run, you know, they need to be better in short yardage. That's the main gripe. We know this offense, at least based off of what we've seen from Arthur Smith's play calling so far this year, is going to want to run the ball a lot on third and ones type situations. So they need to step up there, and they have the last couple of weeks. So hopefully that progress can continue as well. When we assess the individual performances of this offensive line, Chris Lindstrom's been very good this year, both as a run blocker and pass protector. Jake Matthews has been very good as a pass protector, has been very poor as a run blocker. Matt Hennessy has graded out very well according to Pro Football Focus as a run blocker. I'm not really seeing that on film. It's not like he's playing poorly, but it just seems like he's kind of been average to me as a run blocker so far this year. You look at Jalen Mayfield, had a very rough start this year, has shown some progress since then, you know, has been better, has done more good as a run blocker than a pass protector, but is still inconsistent in both arenas, particularly pass protection. Caleb McGarry has been up and down as a run blocker, although it's probably more down than up. as a run blocker, and he's had some positive performances in pass protection where he was basically able to marginalize players like Shaq Barrett and Chase Young, but you've also seen him struggle against those Eagles pass rushers as well as Azeez Ojulari in that week three game. So really the main issue with Caleb McGarry has been consistency, and that's really the story of the offensive line. We just need to get that unit more consistent, and the hope is that the more that these guys play together, we will see more consistency show. And again, as I mentioned earlier, that trend line is moving in the positive, in the up direction. So that's a positive for this unit moving forward. So that's where we'll leave it in terms of breaking down the Falcons offense. And we'll discuss this Falcons defense moving forward on today's Locked On Falcons and see if there's maybe a little bit more consistency on that side of the ball. But before we get there, guys, I want to thank you for making Locked On Falcons your first listen of the day. I hope you guys enjoyed your Falcons free Sunday of football, and you guys can catch up on all the things that happened on the Locked On NFL podcast, which is free and available on all podcast platforms as well as YouTube. Locked On NFL every Monday is recapping the biggest stories and headlines from Sunday's slate of games. So go check out Locked On NFL. So, guys, does this sound familiar? You've got that one device that lets you catch the game live, another that lets you stream your favorite shows, and you're watching sports highlights on your phone, and you've got your father's, brothers, nephews, cousins, former roommate Deborah's login for your preferred streaming service. Well, I want to tell you about a simple way that you can get all the entertainment that you love without any of the hassle, and a great way to finally get your TV together. It's called DirecTV Stream, and it brings you live TV and on-demand favorites together like never before. So you can watch your favorite sports, movies, shows, all in one place. That means no more juggling remotes, no need to buy another device ever again. And the best part, besides not having to borrow Deborah's login anymore, there's no annual contract. So get rid of the clutter and the confusion and get your TV together with DirecTV Stream. You can learn more about DirecTV Stream by heading over to DirecTV.com. That's DirecTV.com. Compatible device required. Content varies by package. So looking at the Falcons defense, starting with the interior defensive line, Grady Jarrett has been very good. But if you listen to Friday's episode, we also discussed that Grady Jarrett hasn't been as good as we've seen, particularly the last three seasons to start out this year. So hopefully he can start to get back to his 2018, 2019, 2020 form in the last 11 games of this season. But outside him, looking at this interior defensive line group, it's been somewhere ranging from underwhelming to meh. You know, and so the run defense hasn't been great. It hasn't been terrible. It's probably been one of the more consistently graded units that I've had so far this season. We'll talk more about the grades later in today's episode. But basically, they've been getting a C+, a C or a C- in terms of the run defense every single week in my grades on the rapid reaction episodes. Hopefully we get to see an expanded role for Mike Pinnell, who's brought up from the practice squad. And we don't see a situation if and when Marlon Davidson comes back from his injury that Mike Pinnell is going to suddenly have his snap count reduced or wind up going back to the practice squad. And hopefully that will provide that boost to the run defense. But the rest of this unit, whether we're talking about Jonathan Ballard or Taquan Graham or Tyler Davidson, have been, you know, a whole lot of meh. They're not guys that are going to make a ton of impact plays. You're not going to see tackles for losses and sacks and pressures from those guys. They're just sort of rotational guys that can do their job. And they've been doing it functionally well, but nothing that's really stood out. Now, moving on to the edge group, we've seen a resurgence from Dante Fowler. He's certainly doing a lot more this year than he was a year ago, so he certainly has improved. He's not necessarily getting the consistent pressure that you're looking for snap to snap, series to series, game to game in that. But at this point in time, you know, I don't think anybody's really holding their breath that Dante Fowler is going to be that top end pass rusher that you have those expectations for, despite his impressive sack numbers in 2019. He's never really been that type of guy that can sort of carry a pass rush. You know, even when you go back to his Saxonville days in with the Jaguars, he was usually the fourth or fifth best guy on that front. You know, we've seen from some of the young guys like Adeoga Ndeji, he's done some positive things. We talked about him quite a bit on Friday. We talked about Jacob Tuimoloau on Friday as well. So go check out that episode if you haven't. And though, you know, JTM has done a lot of things purely by his high motor. The other edge, the starting edge, Steven Means, has been underwhelming. But he is coming off his best game against the Jets, so that's fair to point out with him. Brandon Copeland has been very limited in his role on defense and has primarily been a special teams guy. So you're not really expecting this the rest of this edge group to do a ton of a lot, but this year is really about, you know, evaluating the young guys, particularly Ogundeji and JTM, and seeing what you have in them. And then probably in all likelihood, you know, you're going to probably go out there and start over at this edge rusher group, depending on sort of how much investment you need to make in that unit based off of how those guys perform, as well as what, you know, Dante Fowler does the rest of this year. Moving on to the linebacker group, you know, there have been some positives from Deion Jones and Foye Olukun, your two starting guys. But again, like a lot of other position groups we've talked about already today, it's a lot of inconsistency. I thought Deion Jones played really well against the Giants, not so much in the game since then. You know, Olukun, I feel like, is trending upwards slowly, not necessarily having the high impact performances this year like we saw at times last year. So we'll see if that can pick up, you know, in the last two thirds of this upcoming season. You know, Michael Walker has had some positive moments despite very limited action. And I know I also noticed some times where there have seemed to be some mental errors. And I do wonder if that's related to why the team hasn't felt as compelled to get him into the mix in terms of, you know, spelling guys like Jones and Olukun and maybe getting even Walker some reps as an outside linebacker as well to take advantage of his coverage ability. But we'll sort of see if that changes again in this sort of back two thirds of the season. You know, one of the things I've noticed as well is that they're not blitzing Jones and Olukun as much these last couple of games as they did the first 2 weeks of the season. Now, I haven't really fully charted the defense. I'm hopefully going to be done by Tuesday or Wednesday. And so I wonder if some of that is maybe tied to some schematic things that they did the first couple of weeks and haven't been doing as much the last couple of weeks, or if that's just another choice that they have made. So hopefully I'll be able to shed some light on that later this week once I've gone through the film. Let's move on to the cornerback position. AJ Terrell has been outstanding this year. Fabian Moreau has been much maligned. I don't think he's been as bad as his reputation has suggested, but I think a lot of the struggles have been related to penalties. He's gotten five in the last three games, so that needs to stop. He needs to be more consistent. I think he's been generally done a good job in run support. He's missed some tackles from here or there, but there's been more good than bad, I think, in run support. But obviously the coverage is really where he needs to be better at. He has been inconsistent there, to say the least. I don't think he's been as bad, as I said earlier, as his Pro Football Focus grades seem to suggest. He currently ranks 112th out of 121 going into this weekend's set of games. And my perception, you know, if I could put a ballpark figure on it, my perception of his play, I would imagine instead of being 112th, he would probably be somewhere in the 80s. So that's not a great ranking, but that's, you know, decent for a top three corner in this league. So, you know, when you look at AJ Terrell's ranking, you know, no concerns there. He's ranked 23rd currently. If you looked at Isaiah Oliver's rankings before his injury, he was 15th. So, you know, filling those shoes is going to be a big part now that Oliver's out for the season with a knee injury. And I think that's going to be a big part of this cornerback room, whether we see more of Richie Grant, who's coming off a pretty solid game against the Jets. Not great, but solid. You know, or is it more of Avery Williams or Darren Hall down the stretch? Whether one of these three guys can really emerge as a potential long-term option at that nickel cornerback position, I think it's going to be an important thing to discover this year. But, you know, as we've seen across several other positions on this defense, you know, this year at the cornerback group is going to be primarily an evaluation and development year. Moving on to the safety group, you know, I thought Eric Harris left a lot to be desired in those first two games, but then played really well against Washington, if you can forgive the multiple dropped interceptions in that game. Daron Harmon hasn't been great this year, but is certainly coming off what his worst game was against the Jets, and that was certainly reflected in his PFF grade. Jalen Hawkins did a solid job against the Jets, has been generally solid in his limited opportunities prior to this Jets game. We'll see if he gets an expanded role the rest of the season. We'll also see if Richie Grant gets an expanded role at the safety position. But again, if he's the best nickel corner, we're probably not going to see Grant get that full-time starting job at safety, but he'll just wind up being a full-time starter at the nickel cornerback. So that's going to play a lot of it, and a lot of that probably depends on what Avery Williams and Darren Hall show to see if we can get more opportunities to see Grant at that safety position. So that's going to do it for us with the Falcons defense, and we'll turn our attention to the Falcons special teams and wonder if this is also an evaluation year for that unit. And we'll look back as well at the grades that I've handed out for the various phases of the games, the pass offense, the rush offense, the pass defense, the rush defense, as well as that special teams unit through the first 5 weeks. And before we get there, guys, I want to once again thank you for making Locked On Falcons your first listen. But I have another recommendation for your second listen. That is none other than the Locked On Braves podcast, so that you can follow along with the Atlanta Braves in their bid to win the National League. Locked On Braves, of course, can be found on Odyssey or wherever you get your podcasts. So, guys, did you also know that Built Bar, which is the best tasting protein bar on the market, has several delicious flavors? Whether you're a fan of coconut almond like me, or mint brownie, peanut butter brownie, double chocolate, cherry barcia, cookies and cream, salted caramel, there's something for everyone. And there's also the occasional limited time flavor like cherry lime, strawberry puff, rocky road, or cookie dough chunk. I highly recommend cookie dough chunk. If you're a big fan of eating cookie dough, you can try them all with a mixed box. Built bars are great because they taste just like a candy bar containing 100% real chocolate, but you get none of the guilt because they're healthy too, since they're low in sugar and calories, high in protein and fiber. Of course, you know, there's nothing more guilty than sneaking into the refrigerator and grabbing some cookie dough, but you don't have to do that. You don't have to feel guilty about that anymore with the cookie dough chunk Built bar. Go get your own by heading over to built.com and use the promo code LOCKED15, and you'll get 15% off your first order. That's promo code LOCKED15 for 15% off at built.com. So we know that football season is in full swing, and as always, BetOnline is your number one spot for all the pro and college football action this season. With a new updated website and interface and even more odds, props, and contests, BetOnline.ag continues to be the number one source for everything football. Head over to the website or use your mobile device to sign up today with the promo code LOCKEDON for a 50% welcome bonus. BetOnline, of course, is the fastest and easiest way to bet on all your favorite sports, from football, baseball, basketball, boxing, right to your favorite Vegas casino games. Don't wait and take advantage of all the amazing offers available for the 2021 season at BetOnline. BetOnline, your online sportsbook experts. So looking at the Falcons special teams going position by position, you know I got to break it down, right? The kicker position, Younghoe Koo has been lights out this year. No complaints about his performance this year. You know, the only complaint I would say, like, his kickoffs aren't perfect, but he's been better in limited opportunities this year than he was a year ago. So we'll see if he can continue to get better there. The punting position has really been the problem for the special teams unit. We basically, you know, before Cam Neiselick got injured, you know, he had two bad games, one mediocre game and one good game. And then, you know, since he's been on IR with a hamstring injury and been replaced by Dustin Colquitt, his one action was a borderline bad performance against the Jets this past week. So essentially, you know, looking at these five games, the Falcons punting game has hurt the team in at least three out of them. So that needs to change moving forward. And part of me wonders, you know, how long is this injury settlement that the Falcons signed with Sterling Hoffrichter this summer? Because at some point you imagine typically they're like 6 weeks. And so after that point, you know, in theory, I think you can re-sign him. So I'm sitting here wondering, like, if Sterling Hoffrichter is getting healthy and based off of social media, he seems to be trending in that direction, can we bring him back to help solve this punting situation? Moving on to the long snapper position, it's always been rock solid. You know, Josh Harris has been rock solid. The last time I can recall Josh Harris dealing with any problems snapping the football was his rookie season in 2012. You look at the return position, we haven't seen Cordero Patterson make the big impact return. And this was one of the initial questions I had and why I was initially critical of the signing of Cordero Patterson. Not because he's not a valuable kickoff returner, but you do wonder, are you paying $3 million to get a guy that's only going to touch the ball, you know, less than 30 times a year in terms of his kickoff value? And right now, based off of how many opportunities he's had in the first five games, he's basically on pace to get 27 kickoff returns this year and wonder if that's enough, if that's worth $3 million. Now, fortunately, that statement has been proven wrong by how valuable Cordero Patterson has been to the Falcons offense. So you're not worried about him only getting 27 touches as a kickoff returner. And the good thing about being a return specialist is you only need one, right? If he only returns 27 kickoffs and he fails on 26 of them, but, you know, succeeds and takes one to the house, no one's going to complain about the other 26 failures, right? You can have, you know, a 4% hit rate on kickoff returns and be considered very good at your job. And we know Cordero Patterson, based off his body of work, is very good at his job. So we'll just sort of see if he gets that opportunity later in the season and, you know, thus prove me wrong for a second time this year. As far as Avery Williams goes as the team's primary punt returner, he's been decent, you know, nothing great to write home about, but he hasn't been bad either. We saw Olamide Zaccheaus do a decent job last week replacing Avery Williams, so we'll see how that goes moving forward. Again, same rules apply. You just need one big return and everybody, you know, thinks you're wonderful. And that's not me being, you know, condescending or whatever the case may be. That's just the nature of the beast. As far as the Falcons coverage units on special teams, you know, we've seen two big kickoff returns nearly, you know, one scored against Washington, one nearly scored against the Jets, if not for Darren Hall making a touchdown saving tackle there. So that's not great. The punt coverage has been solid, although one wonders how much of that is related to the poor punting. You know, it's pretty easy to cover a punt when the ball only goes 25 yards. And one wonders if the Falcons get improvement in terms of their punting game and start booming those 50 yarders a lot more frequently, will that sort of expose that the punt coverage unit is not as strong as we thought it was through the early going. So we'll sort of have to see how that goes. But let's leave that there and let's talk about the various grades that I have given out. Again, you know, every week on the Rapid Reaction, I give out grades to the passing offense, the rushing offense, the passing defense, the rushing defense, as well as special teams. And let's just sort of go over the general trend and the average grades that I've been giving out for those various units through the first five games. And it's, you know, difficult for me personally to average these grades when I'm giving out like plus and minuses on these various things. I don't know what is a plus. How does that affect your GPA or whatever the case may be? I don't know exactly, but I'll do my best to sort of give what the average has been. And for the passing offense, it's a C plus, but I think it's bordering, it's trending upwards towards a B minus, thanks to the A minus they got against the Jets and the B plus they had against Washington. This is a unit that has been trending up from that D plus that I give the pass offense in the week one game against Philadelphia. So hopefully, you know, in a couple of weeks when we sort of revisit these grades, it is firmly in the B territory and better than a B minus, but in a firm B by that point in time. Looking at the rushing offense, this is a C bordering on a C plus. Again, thanks in part due to the B plus that they got against the Jets and the B minus they got in week one against the Eagles, but they also had a D against the Bucs in week two, so that's kind of holding them back a little bit. The passing defense, this is a C, a solid C. The Jets game was their best performance again with a B grade, but every other week it's been a C minus or a C for the pass defense. The run defense is another solid C. Like I said earlier, they've earned a C plus, a C or a C minus every single week, and it averages out to be a C. Special teams is a C minus. This is a bordering on a C. They're getting close to a C grade, but this is by far of these five phases have been the weakest unit of the year. Although interesting enough, they're the other phase other than the passing offense against the Jets getting an A. They're the only special teams, the only other unit that has earned an A for me in terms of my rapid reaction grades this year, given their performance against the Giants in week three, where they got an A minus, but that was sandwiched between two D minuses in weeks two and four against Tampa Bay and Washington. So when I look at it across the board, the Falcons generally grade in a C, C plus range across the board. So, you know, we've seen their highest graded performance come against the Jets this past week. And hopefully that's another indicator that things are trending up for this Falcons team as a whole. And it's going to be fascinating to see how they come out their bye going up against this Dolphins team. We know that the Dolphins now just lost again to the Jacksonville Jaguars, who now makes Detroit the only winless team in the league this year. So I think a lot of people, given that we've seen this Falcons team progress each and every week, I think a lot of people are licking their chops looking at this Dolphins team as another very, very winnable game for this Falcon team if they can continue to show progress. And I would generally agree with that. But then part of me also wonders, is this a classic Falcons letdown where we, now that we have a little bit of expectations building for this team, will they let us down in that regard? So we'll be exploring that as the week unfolds. Of course, we'll be getting into our crossover with Locked On Dolphins on Thursday. But in the meantime, we'll probably be talking a little bit more about this Falcons offense and sort of its evolution, you know, ongoing this season, as well as what we can look for moving forward, as well as potentially be joined by other guests to give their assessment on the Falcons through the first 5 weeks of this season so far. So you can, of course, check all of that out as we continue on Locked On Falcons this week. And of course, want to thank you guys for making Locked On Falcons your first listen. And of course, make sure you subscribe to the Locked On Falcons podcast, either the audio version or the video version here on YouTube. If you subscribe to the YouTube version, you will get the podcast a few hours early before that audio version drops at midnight, but you can get it, you know, a couple hours early on YouTube. So if you're hankering to get more of that Locked On Falcons and inject it right into your veins, of course, you could do so by subscribing on YouTube. Make sure you give us a thumbs up on the video. Leave a comment if you will. Obviously, we're trying to grow the audience here on our newest platform on YouTube. And speaking of growing audiences, why not go and check out the Peacock and Williamson podcast, in addition to the Locked On NFL podcast, that is giving you the insight to all the action that you may or may not have missed on Sunday, that you were stress-free from not watching the Falcons. And Brian Peacock, the NFL analyst, and Matt Williamson, the former NFL scout, are giving you their assessment of all 32 teams. And of course, Peacock and Williamson is free and available on all podcast platforms, including Odyssey, Apple, Google, and Spotify. So guys, that's where we'll leave it here. And if you have any feedback, of course, leave a comment on the YouTube page, or you can hit me up via Twitter at Locked On Falcons, via Facebook at Locked On Falcons, or you can send an email to LockedOnFalcons@mail.com. Appreciate it, guys. Till then.